Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're now in lesson 19, and we might be able, maybe yes, maybe not, finish this mini-series here, and that's basically what we did also in the last series that we had about the entirety of the Book of the Law of Moses, and we had many mini-series there where we went through different subject. And so we shall be doing here also in this series about the New Testament, the so-called New Testament. And this would be one of them, about the background of adultery, of marriage, of divorce, of the way God looks at it, of the holy seed, you see. And in essence, now and then there are certain scriptures that would need quite a bit of background to really comprehend and understand it, at least to a larger degree. We cannot necessarily go through every tiny little detail. Much of that will be left for the ones in whose heart is the desire and the hunger and the thirst for righteousness. And as Christ would say, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, and you know, you don't eat and you don't drink unless you are thirsty and hungry, obviously, you're not going to be filled. So it's more or less an in-depth survey, you see, study, but not necessarily totally, you know, detailed, you know, in detailed manner. So we're going to continue now with chapter 7. In essence, we covered the many aspects of the prohibitions against divorce and the reasons for it and the way God himself was willing to put up with an awful lot, you see, in his own marriage. And how he regarded his wife, how much he loved his wife, and in spite of all her sins and iniquities, he was going to take her back to himself. And there are two chapters that are very, among many others, but there are very two chapters, that is, very two very, chapters where God expresses, at least in those two chapters, very much his attitude toward his wife, toward marriage, toward her adultery and fornication, departing from him. And how she had no respect for the marriage institution. And yet in spite of that, he was going to take her back to himself. And if you want to go through that in detail, you can go through the books of, that is the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16, where he speaks about Jerusalem, symbolic of the nation, symbolic of his wife. And then in 23, when he's speaking again about his people, but only in this case in the terms of the separation that they had between the two of them, the northern kingdom and southern kingdom, and so they became sort of two sisters. That's the way he's using the allegory there about them. Two sisters, still one wife, daughters of one mother. And God is describing very graphically, in a very graphic language, bold language. Some people may take exception with it, you know, if they come from a so-called Puritan Victorian background. The manner in which he describes his marriage and the adulteries that they've committed against him, you see, not only once, but many times, and his feelings about it, and ultimately, the willingness on his part, because he hates divorce and because he has a plan and he's not going to deviate, that Israel, and only Israel, is going to be his wife and no one else. And therefore, in spite of all these things, he's telling them that he's going to take them back. And they're going to fulfill the job for which he married them. He wants children. And the children are the nations of the earth, and they cannot come to him unless Israel is willing to be the wife. That's the way God chose it. It's not man. It has nothing to do with the goodness of Israel, or superiority, or intelligence, or righteousness. That's in spite of them. You see, a lot of people don't understand that. And the great whore, and those that came out of her certainly don't understand it. That no matter how bad his people were, they are the only one, the only people, the only wife, the only bride he's ever going to have. You see? Because only through them that he's going to have children. And when another church, and in the biblical sense, you know, church and woman are the same, had taken it upon herself to have many children of all the nations of the earth, God called her the whore. You see? Because only through Israel, only through the commonwealth of Israel, as Paul made it very plain to the Ephesians and many others that apart from the commonwealth of Israel, you were nothing. You had no God, no hope, no promises, no Christ. You see? No salvation. Nothing. Only through Israel, and that's the way God made it. And yet for 2,000 years, false doctrines have been preached about it and taught about it. You know, God forsook you, Israel. You were bad people. They put you down, now he picked us up. Now we've got a Gentile church, and the church now is a Gentile church. You see? God says, no, you are a whore. You're not a church. You're not my people. And so when they come to him at the end of time and say, Lord, Lord, open the door for us too, that's what he's going to tell them. I don't even know you. You are lawless people. You see? There's going to be a rude awakening for an awful lot of people upon the face of the earth and for all those who ever lived in the past 2,000 years thinking that they were a part of the people of God, of the Church of Christ. And he's going to bring them back to life and he's going to open their eyes and he's going to show them, you know, where they've been walking all this time, being children of the whore and the harlots. You see? So for those who are willing to hear, as Christ would say, he that has an ear, let him hear. You see, before that happens, before it's too late. Anyway, we discuss all these matters, but now we're going to discuss some examples that God himself had caused to be recorded, which are sort of exceptions to the rule. And all those things have to be taken into account, and they have to be understood. And so whenever we read a statement that seems to be like a dogmatic statement, we have to understand the entirety of the matter also. And that's the problem with many people. They don't study the whole thing, and then they just pick on certain passage, on a certain area of scriptures, and they build their whole church around it. And the doctrines, they don't realize that they're not walking in righteousness, only partial righteousness, which means the other part of it is vomit from the point of view of God. And the whole thing becomes evil in the sight of God and does not accept it. And so we're going to read now about some examples that God gave us and caused to be recorded when a man and a woman are married, and by law, generally speaking, they're supposed to be together until death parts them, you see? Just like, you know, they're injected into the marriage vow until death does us part, you see? And yet, God allowed exceptions. He himself went through a divorce, you see, and then he's going to bring back his own people. Of course, we cannot do that. That's against the law for us to do it because we cannot die for them. We cannot atone for their sins, you see. So we are not in the same category as God. And therefore, there is no breaking of his own law there because in order to achieve it, he dies, Israel dies, you know, they're dead, you know, they're going to be in the grave. You see, and he divorced Israel, the northern kingdom, and his own wife killed him, so he's gone. So that marriage is no longer valid. And that's what Paul was trying to explain in Romans 7 as we were reading last time. And therefore, now, a new marriage can take place. And the law is not going to be broken. The law that he gave to Moses, which he commanded all of us to keep to this very day. That a woman and a man cannot go back together if they've had a second marriage in between. Even if someone of them is dead, they still can go back to the first one. You see? But God is not breaking his own law. You see? So it's a totally different issue there. And people who do not have knowledge and understanding, that you know, they may not comprehend it and they think, well, the Bible is full of contradictions. And how can I believe it? How can I understand it? Well, the Bible is not written for the fool. It's written for the wise. And a lot of people think they are wise in their own conceit. And so in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians, we actually covered that earlier, but now we're going to talk in specific about the examples that God recorded in terms of there are exceptions, you see, exceptions to the rule. And so we read in verse 12 of 1 Corinthians, but to the rest I, not the Lord, say. In other words, he spoke first to the married people, those who are supposed to be within marriage and how to behave within the marriage institution, you see. And then he spoke about the widows, you see. And he spoke about the singles also. And then he's talking about the rest in terms of mixed marriages. In other words, one woman may be in the church and her husband is not, or one, you know, or the other way around, you know, whichever it may be. That's a mixed marriage, spiritually speaking, not racially speaking. That's a different issue. And so he's speaking to them. And remember what we just covered in the book of Ezra, where the holy seed that God sanctified, you see, that he meant to be his people, just like he said in his last prayer that we read last time, sanctify them through your word, through your truth, that is, your truth, you see, the word of God, the law of God, you see. And so the people of God are the holy seed, those that God calls and sanctifies and reveals his son in them and puts his law in their hearts. This is what sanctifies them. And so the holy seed, you know, if they happen to be, in this case, married to an infidel, an idol worshiper, and this is what he's talking about here, just like in the case of the Jews in the days of Ezra, they married idol worshippers, you see. Had they married just men or women, and generally speaking the issue there was women, but had they married women that were willing to go along with the law of Israel, that was not a problem, because, you know, all the people that came out of Egypt, they joined the house of Israel. They were idol worshippers, but they joined the house of Israel, and God told them, one law shall be to all of you and to the stranger among you. No division there, so you could marry them. That was not an issue. But when it came to idol worshippers, he says, you can't. That's against the law. You see? Because you are defiling the holy seed. And the holy seed can remain holy only if they worship God, not demons. And that's what idol worship is all about. So here we have an exception in terms of idol worship. Now today, for example, if somebody who follows Christ is marrying, let's say, a Buddhist, you see, animist, you know, Shintoist, you know, all those who literally worship idols. That means demons. God would say this marriage is null and void. You see, the person may not know about it, and God may call that person, and that person may come to the knowledge of the truth, but now he has a choice. If his wife is going to raise his kids on idol worship, you see, that will defile the holy seed that they are going to have. And in this case, the law would be applicable. A woman like that should be divorced. And that's not contrary to the law of God that says only when you die. You can be separated, you see, but as long as you're alive, you should be married. So we're going to go through the exceptions here. And that's what he's talking about here. And he says to the brethren, who are of a mixed marriage, but to the rest, not I, the Lord say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, you see, it's an idol worshiper, because in those days that's what you were. We're not talking about, you know, like today, atheists. You know, in those days there were no such things. You either believed in the true God or you believed in other gods. That's the way people were. It's a recent phenomenon, you know, where you find people that don't believe in anything. And so, if she does not believe, that means she walks in a different faith. And it's not talking about the Jews, because they were not in that category. They were all, God, you know, worshippers of God. You know, they may have had some differences in understanding, but they were the people of God, the worshipper of God, so that was not the issue there. It was idol worshippers. And she says, if you know, if he has a woman that does not believe, but she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. If she is willing to live with him, she's going to have to abide by his law, by his religion. And to this very day, there are many societies where a woman, when she marries a man, she's obligated to follow his religion. That's a custom in many nations to this very day. You see? And this is what he's talking about here. If she's willing to be with him, that means she's willing to give up her idol worship. And she's not going to teach her children idol worship, but the religion of her husband. Because now he becomes her God, her father, the authority in the house, her priest, and the one, according to the law of God, that can bind and loose certain things. And so that's what he's saying here. Because of that, if she's willing, you cannot divorce her. Don't use that as an excuse. But she is not willing. That's a different story. And so he says, and a woman who has a husband who does not believe, you see, she's going to go by a different faith. And obviously, when you go by a different faith, you're going to introduce a different faith to your children. Well, that means belief in lies. And the father of lies is the devil himself. And there are demons there, you know, in the process. You see? So that's what God is saying here in order to protect the holy seed. You see? That's the concept behind it. It's not a new one. This is what we just read in Ezra, in other places, in Isaiah, and so forth. and from the day of Moses. That's the way it was. God told them, you destroy all the idol worshippers, don't marry them. You see? And so, in this case, he's dealing with something that has been going long, on for a long time. He did not need to give these instructions to Israel. They already had it through the entirety of the writings, of the Hebrew writings. The Gentiles don't. So now he's introducing to them this teaching, which was not necessary to introduce in the Jewish community. Oh, those Gentiles, you know, that went to the synagogue and were listening and knew the law. And so he says, and a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. Now, the man is willing to follow her religion. You see? Just the other way around. Generally, it's the woman that is supposed to follow her husband's religion, where here is a man who is looking at her religion, and he sees that it is a good religion. And so it happened also with Israel. There were men, you know, Egyptians and others that married Israelite women. And they came with them and were willing to abide by the same law. And that was the only condition, you see, under which God would allow them to become a member of the community of Israel, or else they would have been, you know, been thrown out. As a matter of fact, put to death if they insisted of idol worship on committing idolatry in Israel. And in doing so, defiling the community, you know, their own family and then others. So, you know, once you have the entirety of the picture there in your mind, then you begin to understand a lot of things that the apostles who were raised, you know, they were not Catholics or Protestants. They were not, you know, idol worshippers before that. They were raised on the law of God, on the law of Moses. They knew it thoroughly. And they kept it and they taught it to others. So much of their teachings are based on the law of Moses. That's what so-called Christianity, true Christianity, is all about. And if we don't know it, it's because we're idol worshippers and ignorant people. A lot of people are. That's why Christ does not recognize them. They can claim him, you know, as the Savior and Maker and Redeemer all they want. That's meaningless. You see, you know, they can believe that he is the Christ. So what? Demons believe it. The devil believes that Jesus Christ is the Christ. He's the Son of God. You see, but they don't obey him. And a lot of people who claim to be the followers of Christ, they despise his nature and character and religion. And that's the irony of the whole thing. So-called the world of Christianity, they have rejected the religion of Christ and accepted the person, while the Jews rejected the fact as time went by, and not necessarily the first generation. You see, they knew better, and then after that they were deceived. But they rejected the person of Christ as being the Messiah and the Redeemer and the Son of God, you see, a divine being. But they continued to walk in his religion, the one that he gave in Sinai, as Paul made it very plain, you know, that the people of Israel followed Jesus Christ. And they still do to this very day in their ignorance. They don't know it. You see, that's a confusion there in the minds in both communities, Christian and Jewish communities. And the day will come when Christ is going to open the eyes of all. And that's how he said it many times through the prophets. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. I am the Savior. I am the Redeemer of Israel. You see, there is blindness there on the part of Judah. And there is a lot of blindness on the community of nations. And God is going to put an end to it when he sends Jesus Christ. And then he said, they shall all know me from the greatest to the least, and the knowledge of the Lord shall fill the face of the whole earth. And all the nations then are going to be called by his name. But that's coming at his coming, you know, it's coming later only when he comes. And the apostles were confused at the time, thinking that Christ was coming in their day, and therefore they went out preaching that all those things are going to happen in their day. You see, and they thought, well, this is the time to call not only the people of Israel, but all the nations of the earth. And when people do not have that background, they don't understand why they preach what they preached. You know, they were right in their preaching and the truth, but they were not right in timing. And so a lot of people got confused, and for the past 2,000 years, that's what we have. Confusion and Babylon, and God says to all those who want to worship him in truth and spirit, come out of Babylon, otherwise you're going to be partakers of her plagues. And the overwhelming majority, 99.9% of all so-called Christians, are in Babylon, and they don't know it. Many of them good people, fine people, sincere people. They're very well pleasing in the sight of God in many ways. And yet in Babylon and confused, and God has mercy on them. You see? And those who are willing to listen, you know, they are going to be accepted. And those who are not, they're going to have, you know, to go through the tribulation and the plagues, and their day will come in the future, 1,000 years later. And so we read here about the unbelieving husband, you know, and then we read about the, first, you know, about the wife, and then about the unbelieving husband. It says, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. That is, if he's willing to remain there in the faith, just like the strangers that came out of Egypt with Israel, they were sanctified also by the wife, by Israel, because they became a part of Israel, a part of the commonwealth of Israel. Just like the Apostle Paul, his ministry was in essence the same way, to go to all those Gentiles and to let all of them know, look, this is the law of God, and that's the only way you're going to have to have a relationship with God, you know. This is what Moses was doing. When you think about it, Moses was the first apostle to the circumcision as well as to the circumcision. You see, the law that he gave in Sinai, that God gave him, after he spoke, you know, the 10 oracles, he gave it to all of Israel, but he also taught all the non-Israelites. You see, just like the commission of the Apostle Paul, who was commissioned to go to the kings, you see, to the Gentiles and to the children of Israel. Only in his case, his emphasis was on the nations, while in the case of Moses, obviously, the emphasis was on Israel. But they were taught the same way in Sinai. If you're going to be walking in the same laws of my people Israel, you will be sanctified. It's the same message. It's not, you know, it's not a new religion, you see. And people don't know that. They think, well, there is an Old Testament religion, a New Testament religion. We are totally separate. We have two different gods and so forth. That shows you the confusion in which people are. So again, in verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife, you know, if they are idol worshippers and yet are willing to follow the new religion, you see, and live in peace with it, is sanctified by the husband. You see, how are they going to be sanctified? By the mere fact that they are willing to abide by that law, by this word. As Jesus Christ said, sanctify them by your truth. And the only way you can be sanctified, if you walk in it, if you abide in it. You see, you don't get sanctified just by hanging around and thinking they are going to make it into the kingdom, you know, the coattails of somebody else. It doesn't work like that. You have to abide by that law. You have to admit that this is true. And you have to be willing to walk in it. So all this is a background, and unless you have it, you don't understand what you're reading properly. And that's what he's saying here. They're all sanctified by each other, if they abide by the same law. Otherwise, he said, your children would be unclean. That means unholy. That means they would not be a part of the holy seed. And the only way we can be holy, as God made it very, you know, very clear many times, be you holy, for I am holy. How? Don't eat unclean meat. Don't do this. Don't do that. Or keep my Sabbath. You see? Or keep my laws and commandments. That's the only way to holiness. That's the only way to being clean. That's the only way to becoming the holy seed. There is no other way. You cannot do away with the law and become holy. And without holiness, none will see God. None will see the Lord. And it's as simple as that. And for 2,000 years, people have been lied to. That you can be filthy and polluted and defiled and despise the law of God, the Torah of God, and yet be accepted. And they didn't realize for 2,000 years Christ did not listen to one single of their prayers. He was not in their churches on Sunday, on the day of the sun, where they came to worship demons and they didn't know it. You don't worship God on a day that he said, it's not my holy day. I don't go there. You see, the Sabbath comes, God goes to a place where people worship him on the Sabbath. You're not going to go on a place where they go to worship him either on Sunday or Friday or Tuesday or Monday or any other day. You see, and people don't understand it, unfortunately. And that's where God says, don't get mixed up, you know, with people like that. And don't follow them. You see, now if they're willing to live in peace and they don't bother you, that's one thing. But if they're going to force their religion on you, in essence it tells them, throw them out. You're allowed to. You can divorce a person like that. And of course nowadays, you know, you have this supposedly Christian people that call themselves Christians, you know, they believe in Christ, they believe in God. You see, they're not idol worshippers in that sense. But on the other hand, you know, they're going to force their lies on you. You see, the exception is given there. You can divorce him. And that's what Paul is going to teach here. He said, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. But now they are holy. You see why? Because they keep the same law that you do. They're not going to be holy if they despise the law of God and do their own thing. Just because, you know, their parents happen to be the servants of God, that doesn't make them holy. You see, a lot of people don't understand that either. They too have to walk in the same path and way, or else they become unholy. You see? And there were many laws to explain that to Israel. Even if you touch an unholy thing, you become unholy. If you touch a dead body, if you touch a dead animal, you see? And many things like that render the people of Israel unholy unless they were willing to rectify the problem, you see? And there were certain sacrifices for it and rituals that they had to go through and washing, you see? Ceremonial things to symbolically cleanse and purge and purify themselves, and then they could approach the congregation of God being holy. Otherwise, they would have been cut off. God would have destroyed them because he was not about to compromise with his holiness. That's why he says, without holiness, you cannot see God. You can't come to his temple. You cannot come to his place of worship, wherever it is, being unholy. You see? And if you do, God is going to come after you one way or the other. A lot of people don't realize why they have so many problems in life, because they are not obeying the law of God and they are despising him and his holiness. And so he says, now they are holy. But, you see, this is where he's giving that exception. You see, that's the mind of God. He's not speaking his own mind. But if the unbeliever, if the idol worshiper, if the person who insists on going his own way and doing his own thing, you see, and he's going to affect the children that way, you see, if the unbeliever departs, let him depart, or let her depart. You see, that means if they're not willing to live with you, and they're not willing to abide by your law and commandments, they're not willing to abide by your religion, if they want to go, let them go. You see, you're not bound to them. And that's what he's saying here. A brother or a sister is not under bondage. What bondage is he talking about? Bondage to the law of marriage, that binds you. You see? When it binds you, you are under bondage. You see? You cannot get loose unless somebody dies. And that's what he's saying here. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace, not war, not strife. Not two different spirits within the same family confusing the children and affecting one another and polluting the minds of each other, you know, or seducing one another into their religion. You see? So when you understand the entirety of the teachings of the law that God gave and how he expounded on it in the prophets, you begin to understand what Paul is talking about. And if you don't have that background, you don't know what he's talking about. You see? You may know bits and pieces, but you don't have the picture. So it's important to go to verse 1, the first word of the Bible, Genesis 1:1, and read it thoroughly to understand in its entirety the law of God, the mind of God, the nature of God. This is Jesus Christ speaking, you know, from the Garden of Eden to righteous Abel and all the patriarchs and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and the prophets, and then coming in person and then speaking through his disciples. That's the same mind, and Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You see? He did not evolve into a new creature, a new religion, a new God. You see? That's a doctrine of demons that has been taught for the past 2,000 years. And to begin with, they don't know that he is the same person that came down on Mount Sinai. That's the confusion there that is in the heart of many. And yet they think that their followers of Jesus Christ, and they don't know what they are talking about. And so, this is what he's saying here. And then on the other hand, he says that, you know, if there is no such an issue, they don't depart, they do not, you know, poison the minds and hearts of children with a pagan religion, and if they are instead, you know, introducing strife into the family, you see, if they're willing to live in peace, that's one thing, you know, because God called us to peace. Peace within the religion, peace within life, peace within the family. But if people are not willing to, well, obviously that's a different story. But if they are not, you see, if they are not causing these problems, if they do not depart, if they do not object to your religion, You see, they let you exercise your religion, and they let you teach the children also, for which you are responsible according to the law of God, to teach in the ways of God. You see, if they don't stand in the way, then he said, don't separate. And that's what he says here in verse 16, for how do you know, O wife, you are walking the law of God, you who are a servant of God, you who are holy, how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? How is she going to save him? You see, he's not a savior. Christ is. Well, by the mere fact that she walks in righteousness and the husband sees that, and then gradually he's won over, you see, and he begins to follow the same religion, and then he becomes a part of it, and then God works with that person. And that's what he's talking about. It's not that she's, shoving, her religion down his throat. By example, he said, by your good works, he said, let people see the light in you. You see, not by haranguing people and oppressing people with your religion, shoving it down their throat, as the manner of many was in the past 2,000 years. And many of those who call themselves the followers of Christ, the defenders of the faith, they were shoving it down the throat of the Jewish community and other communities where they could. You see, by threats, persecution, by death, war, you see, the sword, bloodshed. Oh, that's all that is vomit in the sight of God. And those people are going to be brought into account when they are raised from their grave. This is where they are. They're not in heaven, they're not in hell. And they're going to have their eyes opened to see what they've done, to realize that they've been serving the devil all this time and not God. And so he's saying here, how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? How do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? But as God has distributed to each one, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk. And so I ordain in all the churches. That's the law. You see? So you see the fact that he's making it very plain that people are to be bound to each other and not play games with it. And then you see the exception that he's talking about here and under what circumstances and how much does he try to live in peace as much as possible even if the other person is not a believer. You see? But if the other person is not a believer and is not a persecutor either, that's one thing. But if he's the other person, is not a believer and he's a persecutor, well, there you've got a different issue. Because God called us to peace. And he cannot have peace when he has strife within the family. You see? That's where the exception here of divorce is sanctified by God. And that's what Paul is talking about here. So this is one example here. And let's go to another example in, again, the same book of Corinthians, chapter 6. We'll backtrack here. And in chapter 6, the Apostle Paul gives us another issue here, under which it's a different one, obviously, but under which two that became one can separate. And it's not the classic case of marriage, but based on the law of God, that when two become one, they become one flesh. That means they're married. That's what it means. You have sex with a woman, you have sex with a man, you are bound, you're married. And if you don't want to be bound, then you have no business having sex with any person that is not your mate. And that's what he's going to explain here. And under the circumstances, obviously, they're not going to be bound to remain with them as husband and wife, even though they became one flesh. And so the Apostle Paul is explaining to the Corinthians, who were having a problem, just like many other nations, they had their temples and they had their prostitutes in the temple. And, when a man and a woman, wanted to have sex, this is where they went to. If they didn't have a mate, or even if they had a mate, they could still do it. And they didn't realize that you can't do that in accordance with the law of God. You see? Because in accordance with the law of God, from the Garden of Eden, when a man and a woman have sex, they become one flesh. So he cannot go to prostitutes even though, the church that became known as the Catholic Church for centuries allowed, not only allowed, but sponsored brothels. And many cardinals and bishops owned brothels where they had prostitutes, women that went astray, and that was only, even if they had one-time sex and nobody wanted to marry them, and they ended up in places like that. Nobody else, would give them any respect, or nobody would marry them. And so they ended up in places like that where at least, you know, they could, you know, clothe themselves and eat and drink. And the church has encouraged that, in essence, at that point. And their reasoning was, which is a demonic reasoning, not a godly reasoning, oh, well, you know, that's one way we can preserve the marriage. At least, you know, this way, you know, the man is going to go to a woman like that. He's going to have, you know, his needs satisfied and desires and passions, whatever. And then he'll go back to his own wife and take care of his own children. And so they get to the point where they sanctified that, where they sanctified, you know, the temple prostitutes. You see, only in this case they were not called temple prostitutes, but that's basically what they were. That's what the brothel became. The temple of love. And that's where the idol worshippers had, temples of love, where they went there to make love to men and women and to their idols, to their demons. And Paul is making them understand, you can do it. You see, Israel used to do it all the time, and God warned them against it. They did it anyway. And he gave them laws. You get rid of those, Kedeshim and Kedeshot, the sanctified one, men and women, you see, that were in the temple. And so people did it anyway. And yet that's contrary to the law. You cannot be a part of God and do that. And that's what he's saying to them. Because even if you marry under these circumstances, which is not a marriage in terms of a ceremony, you see, in romance and things like that, but you can imagine some people, you know, like to go to their favorite male or female, and then maybe even they fell in love with them, had relationship, you know, emotions, feelings, whatever it may be, whether they did or not, it's neither here nor there. Your bodies touch, you become one, you have sex, you are married. And he told them, you can't do it. Which means you got to divorce them. Even though it could be a one-night stand, you know, it's still neither here nor there. The law is very plain. The two that have sex become one flesh. And so this is what he's explaining to them here. So in verse 15 we read, chapter 6 of 1 Corinthians, do you not know that your bodies are the members of Christ? It's not just your head. You see, that was one of the doctrine of demons that was introduced into the church that called herself the Holy Mother Church. You know, that in your thoughts you should remain pure and give it only to God, but your body, it's okay, you can have it defiled. Now, that's not a biblical doctrine, you see. God said to his people Israel, you be holy, your body. Not only your mind, but your body also has to be holy. Now, that's why you cannot eat unclean food. That's why you cannot touch the dead body. You see, that's why there are many things that you cannot do. If you want to appear before God, you have to purify yourself first. You see, so that's what he's saying here, repeating the same teaching of Moses that God gave them. And he gave it from the Garden of Eden. It's not something new. He says, don't you know that your bodies, the entirety of it, are the members of Christ? Because the Holy Spirit is in the head, and the head is a part of the body. You cannot separate it one from the other. If you defile your spirit, your body is defiled. You defile your body, your spirit is defiled. It says, your bodies are members of Christ. Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? That's exactly what they were doing. They didn't call them harlots. They were temple prostitutes, sanctified ones. But he said, that's what they are. And that's what God warned Israel not to do. And that's exactly what they did, in spite of it. He says, shall I make, you know, the members of Christ, you know, members of a harlot? Certainly not. How did they become a member of a harlot? You have sex with a harlot, a male or a female, you become one. The two members become one member. You see? That's what he's talking about. Verse 16, he says, do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her or with him? You know, you're a homosexual, you become one. And when you become one, you're married. That's how marriage takes place. You know, not just sweet, nice little words, you know, but the very act itself that became known as consummation of the marriage. You see, that's marriage. That's why God says, don't ever go to a woman that is not yours. And a woman should not go to a man that is not hers. And some people, in their deviation and perversion, still to this very day, among the nations, you know, that call themselves Christians, they have even bestiality. And they become one. One flesh with an animal. They're married to them. Of course, they don't see it, don't understand it, because they don't see it from God's point of view. And God doesn't want us to do it. And all the angels, you see, angels are the spirit beings, but the animals are a replica of the angels. Now, a lot of people don't know how angels look like, and the Bible describes them. that look like animals, you know, eagle and ox and serpents and birds and things like that. The physical creation of the animals is a counterpart of the angels. And the physical counterpart of God is man, you see. And God doesn't want the two mixed up, because that's bestiality. And when people worship demons, they commit bestiality, spiritual bestiality, because what they are, that's what they are. And that's why when God came down to judge Egypt, you see, to bring his people, he said, I'm going to judge all the gods of Egypt. And he struck the cattle and the lice and all the animals and creatures in Egypt and the serpents, because they were all worshipped by those people. And people don't comprehend that because they do not know the law of God. They don't study it. To know the entirety of the mind of God, so you would really know, ultimately speaking, what would Jesus do? The God of Israel, Jesus Christ, this is what he would do. Well, this is what he would not do. Now, that's the law from Genesis to Revelation. And so he says, do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, speaking about God, Jesus Christ, same person, two, he says, shall become one flesh. How do they become one flesh? They have sex. That's how you become one flesh. And then the two become one. You see, that's two in one. Yet, you know, still two separate beings, but they become one. And that's what the Father and Christ are. They're one. You see? And then we become one in them, they become one in us. And people don't understand even this concept of oneness. And so they came up with this pagan doctrine of the Trinity. God is three in one. Well, you know, they're all inside him and he's inside them and all this confusion. And they say it's a mystery because they don't know what they're talking about. They don't understand it. You know, that's insanity. And that's what he's trying to show them. You cannot do that. He says, but he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. You see? Therefore, he tells them, flee sexual immorality. If you eat the flesh of Christ, if you drink his blood, you become one with him. You see? And he is in you, and you are in him. And that's why he describes his relationship with his people in terms of a marriage and sexual relationship. You see? Spiritually speaking. And that's why he's very graphic about sexuality. And that's why the devil had to make this very essence through which God is reproducing himself and is becoming one with man a dirty thing, a foul thing. And from the Garden of Eden, he started that and he caused Adam and Eve to become ashamed of it. Well, they've never been before that. A lot of people do this very day in so-called Christianity or any given religion. They have a lot of inhibitions, a lot of perverted concepts and ideas about sexuality because they've been consorting with the wrong spirit. The people of God who are purely the people of God, who are clean and pure and purged, you know, that when God, you know, removed all that vomit and filth, which obviously hasn't done it for most, because there are still many who have it, who are still, you know, people of God and have the Spirit of God. But the people that have allowed God to totally wash them and cleanse them and purge them and purify them, they have no problem with sexuality. They know the beauty, the glory, the majesty of it, the purity of it. They enjoy it to the full. You see? Others are foul in their own minds. And so they cannot worship God in those areas. And they too have to come out of Babylon that taught all these concepts and ideas, and they don't realize they're still very deeply in it. When they have this so-called, you know, Victorian, Puritan, or whatever concepts people come up with in any given generation, century, or millennium. And so, obviously, in this case, though marriage occurs when two have sex and they become one flesh, obviously, you don't want to be married to a harlot, prostitute, you know, so you're going to have to divorce. How do you divorce her? Well, keep away from her. You see, don't go there anymore. Cut off the relationship. That's what divorce means, cut off. You see? And so you have, you know, that example. So if somebody's hanging around, you know, is hanging around with a woman or a man that are loose and mess around with others, you see, they're married to them, and God says, you got to divorce them. Cut yourself off from them and get out of this relationship. And of course, people today don't understand that. You know, they give it, you know, all kind of names. And they don't realize what marriage is all about and how does it occur and how God feels about it and how should people treat you know, treat this matter and how should they behave within this concept and institution. And so this, in essence, is a second example of it. Let's go now to, while we are here in Corinthians, let's go to another example here in Corinthians, in chapter 7, and verses 3 and 5, since we are here nearby, in the neighborhood, so to speak. In chapter 7, in verses 3, where we went through the scriptures before that, addressing marriage, in verse 3 he says, "Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her." In other words, they gotta have sex. He has to fulfill her special, you know, his, you know, her sexual desires. That's a part of the marriage, or you know, how else are you gonna have marriage? You see, you have to be able to integrate not only emotionally, psychologically, but also sexually, physically. And so the law of God is you cannot withhold sexual favors. A lot of women, you know, are using that all the time. You know, "Honey, I've got a headache. I've got this and I've got that." Or, "I'm angry with you. You know, I'm upset. I'm unhappy." Or men may do that. They do it both ways. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.